you have to provide value to the business. You have to show them what you're doing. But if you don't ask those questions and you don't know what's valuable, none of it matters, right? And I think procurement departments in particular get stuck in, I'm here to drive savings, I'm here to drive compliance, I'm here to drive whatever, and inherently think this should be important to everybody.
Welcome to Modern Business Operations, where we talk with leaders about how ops is adapting to our modern world.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Modern Business Operations. My name is Sagi. I'm the CEO and founder of Tonkin. And today I have the pleasure of hosting Nathan, the Senior Director and Chief Procurement Officer at VSP Vision. Hey, man. Very good to have you.
Thanks. Thanks for having me. It's good to be here.
Well, you did some amazing things in your career so far. But instead of me just reading from a paper, maybe tell us a little bit about kind of your background and how you ended up at VSP and then your and procurement in general.
Yeah. I think like most procurement practitioners, I fell into procurement by accident or by destiny, maybe is a good way to put it. So my career started off actually in marketing, and which is funny because in college, I hated marketing. I thought it was self-serving and I didn't see the value in it. Right after college, I moved to Europe and I lived in Europe for 5 years and only was able to find marketing jobs. I was fairly strong in analytics. Strategy was what I really liked. And so I was able to take those aspects of things that I liked and put them into my marketing career. So I was in Europe, Italy specifically for 5 years, moved back to California, kept working for the same gentleman I'd worked for, who became a kind of venture capitalist angel investor. He had a portfolio of companies that I ran the marketing for and did that for a few more years, was ready for some growth. Was ready to expand more internationally. All the companies I was working for were Italian companies and they weren't quite ready at the time. So I made a move to Blue Shield of California, where I went from marketing, client facing to now I'm inside, I'm a tiny cog in a big machine and learning to deal with that, which is a much different environment than working with, you know, the clients and the CEOs and things like that. That was great, though. I had a very wonderful leader who taught us a lot of leadership skills. So I was at Blue Shield for about 4 years, wanted to get back into marketing, actually. So I applied for a marketing position at VSP. And somehow Greg Tennyson, who was the former CPO of VSP Vision, got a hold of my resume and said, hey, I've got something that might interest you. What do you think about doing finance procurement? And I said, I don't think that sounds fun at all. That's not what I want to do. And what he said was that was the guys for hiring the role. What he was looking for was to make procurement more strategic. While there was a financial aspect to my role at the time, I got to come in and really work on continuing the brand evolution that Greg had started with Moolah. I don't know if you're familiar with Moolah. It was a giant monster that we had as our procurement mascot, but I was able to use that as a jumping off point to continue to drive the procurement brand within VSP and subsequently just got more and more responsibility as we went along up until a couple of years ago when I took over the CPO role.
I got the chance to talk to folks from procurement, legal and IT and CIOs, and procurement is always, the folks always start the same way you did, you know, where they sort of stumble through it. I've never heard someone coming from marketing though. That's a first. And it's very intriguing. You mentioned strategy, probably the word strategy several times doing thing, and also as a way to explain the first role you had when you came into that, when we made that transition, if you will, from marketing. And it made me think about the fact that I do actually see strategy, the chief strategy officer and marketing sometimes like aligned. Maybe that's an interesting place for us to chat for a second. What is strategic? What does it mean to like work on the strategy? We can talk about specifically around procurement, we can talk about it in generally. A lot of people, I think, too easily talk about, oh, no, this is tactical and this is strategic. And I think if you ask people what is strategic work, not many people know to define it well.
Yeah, I would 100% agree with you on that. And I think when people talk about strategic work in procurement, it's not strategy as we tend to think about it in general, right? If I'm thinking strategy, to me, that is a lot of understanding the market and its dynamics and the players and understanding the impact that your competitors have and the desires of the market and taking all that information and generating a plan that then you're moving the business forward with. From a procurement perspective, we don't often play in that role. So I think for procurement practitioners, when we say strategic, I think what we mean is the value add work. And let me clarify that by saying, I look at value add work as I would hire out to have someone provide this service. And I think with procurement, one of procurement's kind of banes is that people do procurement all the time in their everyday lives. Whether you're in marketing or strategy or legal, people are buying houses, people are buying cars, people are asking for discounts, people are entering contracts all the time. So strategic work for procurement is how do I place my organization in such a way that the business partner gets more value out of us doing the work than they would doing the work on their own. And I think understanding that is actually where my marketing background comes in very handy in procurement is what makes a procurement department important is the value you drive, but what's valuable? You could say savings, which is the easy kind of measurement stick for procurement. But unless you go out and you ask your stakeholders and your business partners and your clients, what's important to you, you're probably really not being strategic at all. Because until you understand that and you understand then how to best develop your organization to serve those needs of one or many stakeholders, you're just pushing paper.
I think you actually articulated something very core that I don't remember discussing in the past, which is, and I want to double click on, which is when you look at the type of work that an organization or corporation or any group of people kind of need to go about and do, most things, obviously some things like, I don't know, hardcore engineering or hardcore health or science that, you know, you might live a full life not doing. And also in the arts, you might never be a musician or a designer. But most things on the operation level, people do to a point. And that includes like even sales. You need to sell. When you go to an interview to apply for a job, you need to sell yourself. And marketing, when you need to communicate an idea to your boss or to your peers or whatever, you do some marketing thinking without necessarily framing it that way. And then similarly to your point, where it started is like when you go and ask for a discount, when you buy something in your personal life, you do some procurement work, whether you know it or not. And the question is then, when you're trying to elevate a function, just saying, I need a procurement leader, or I need a legal or sales or marketing leader, that's me being a CEO. I know that when I hire a leader for a department, not just like bring someone that is a leader, there's versions of those people. Some are better at this stage versus this stage. Some are better at that type of problems versus this type of problem.
Right.
So would you say that as a step one of being strategic, right? Because I really am kind of leaning into the point that you are brought in to make the department more strategic, which I find very intriguing. What does that look like? What are you looking for when you talk to the different stakeholders? How do you build that roadmap?
Yeah, the very first part of that roadmap is research. And that is fundamental. And to me and my marketing philosophy, that's where it all starts, right? You have to do the research before you even know what your positioning message is or anything like that. And Greg at the time had given me a ton of leeway to survey business partners, go out and conduct interviews where I pulled the new card and I said, hey, I'm new here. Can you tell me about, what do you think about procurement here? What services do you like or do you dislike? And so I got to go in and get, to the extent that they want to give a new guy information, pretty honest and open feedback about what was going well and what wasn't going well. So what you do is you take that back and you start to to develop a plan. And I think step two is, now you've identified where some of these issues are, which battles do you want to fight? Because you can't fight them all. And you don't want to fight them all, right? Some are more important than others. So you circle back and you start to generate small wins with these groups. And one of the things I would recommend is I would look for very easy wins with groups that are pro procurement. And I would look for two pretty major wins with groups that probably would never want to interact with procurement for a couple of reasons. The easy wins are going to drive morale in your team. They're going to be excellent kind of talking points that you can very quickly say, hey, team, we're doing great. Here are these wins. Hey, business partner, here are these wins. So now you're feeding these champions with even more information. The areas that wouldn't typically work with procurement, that's where you're almost doubling down, right? And that's where your success is going to be amplified, should it be successful, right? They're the ones that are going to be the naysayers who are going to come around and say, actually, this worked out really well. I would do this again. The dangerous part of that is if you don't do it well, they're the ones that are not ever going to engage you and actually probably be gatekeepers for others that would. So it's important to understand what they want. As you have those wins, what we started to do was take all that information and put it in a roadshow deck, where now we were going out and we were saying, hey, we're procurement, we're here, here's the services that we offer. Oh, and by the way, here are some testimonials from your peers where things have worked out really well, and we encourage you to go out and talk to them. So that was the third step, was that just now starting to get visibility. So you've done your planning, you've got the wins, you're getting some more of that visibility and going out to the business partners. Then what we saw would happen is you start all the way back at the beginning at the research phase, right? Because now you've got some champions on your side, hopefully, but that's a fraction of the company. So now you start back out. And what we had done in the past is we partnered with CEB at the time, and we did business alignment surveys. And essentially, for those that don't know, we asked the business, what is important to you from a procurement perspective? And how well does your procurement team do those things that are important? We turned around and asked our team the exact same questions. What's important to our business partners from a procurement perspective, and what are we good at? The first business alignment survey we did, we weren't even in the same stadium. What was important to the business wasn't even on our procurement radar, and vice versa. The things that we thought were really important to the business weren't. And that's kind of a come to Jesus moment, right? Where you go, I thought we were doing the right thing. I thought we were doing great. Turns out business doesn't want any of this, right? And so what we were able to do, that allows you then to now start to pierce that a little bit more. Because a survey, people are responding anonymously or whatever. But now you can go and you can ask more tailored questions to some of the respondents about how to get better. And that was a game changer for us in terms of becoming, at least visually to the group, more strategic, right? Because now we're truly focusing on their needs. We're meeting their needs. We're providing the transparency and the clarity that we probably wouldn't have absent.
This episode is brought to you by Tonkin. Tonkin is the operating system for business operations, providing businesses with the building blocks to orchestrate any process with no code or change management required. Contact us at tonkin.com to learn how you can build complex processes fast.
What was the name of it again? Business alignment
survey? It was a business alignment survey, correct.
This sounds such a basic, though powerful tool. I couldn't help myself where you were talking about that process, how much it sounds like bringing a product to market or a service to market, which is, again, of course, the same thing, but how common do you think it is for leaders of departments like procurement to actually do that work, or versus how rare it is?
I think it's rare that this kind of work is done, especially procurement in many organizations is a shared service, right? And I think one of the natural downfalls to any shared service department, you just take it for granted. Like, I'm here for the business to use, right? The business should use me. I'm here. That doesn't mean the business doesn't care. Quite honestly, the business doesn't care. You have to provide value to the business. You have to show them what you're doing. But if you don't ask those questions and you don't know what's valuable, none of it matters, right? And I think procurement departments in particular get stuck in, I'm here to drive savings, I'm here to drive compliance, I'm here to drive whatever, and inherently think this should be important to everybody, and it's not, right? So you have to go out and you have to find out what's important and then build your bench, right? And that was the next thing that we did is once we did this business alignment survey and we identified what's important, we fundamentally changed our communication strategy with the business. We changed our training platform with our team in terms of what we wanted to focus on and what we wanted to train. And there was a very much a retelling of, hey, we heard you. This is what's important to you. Look at what we've done to become better at that. And that is well received by your business partners when they see that you are taking the steps to best serve them. That's huge, right? That's what they want. They want you to solve their problems. They want to engage you in things that they don't have the time for. But if you're showing them that you can add that value, they welcome that.
It's getting even extra timely when you think about some of the technology advancements, right? So we don't have to talk about AI. And I feel like everything is AI. So this is not kind of where I'm taking this. But I do think that because of those conversations around AI, and around newer technology, I at least personally have been hearing that, and you mentioned it earlier in the conversation, that more and more human teams, operation teams, back office teams, or front office teams are talking about doing more strategic work, right? And my first question was like, what is strategic work versus strategy? First of all, I think this is a very, very practical tool that you mentioned here. Can that be a leverage point maybe for, because I'm imagining someone listening to this right now and they're in this position where they were really, maybe they're new to their role, maybe they've been in the role for a while and they want to elevate their department. They want to say, I want to be more meaningful. I want to make sure that you know, we're growing or making more impact. Or, and this is where I'm going with this, maybe they're afraid. Maybe they're worried that the next few years are going to look different if technology would continue to provide some of that non-strategic value, like more tactical value. Can that be leveraged? Like, how would you think about that? Because it's not common, right? I'm trying to make it more common. How would you react to that? How do you think about that?
I think about it often, actually. And we hear about AI in the procurement space, and we hear about it in contracts, and it's going to get to a point where it's just machines negotiating with one another. Maybe that's all true. I certainly think what AI is going to do is it's going to allow many procurement teams to be able to become more strategic. And that comes with its own kind of slice of fear, because if you're a procurement team and you're mostly tactical, or you're viewed as mostly tactical, the people that are thinking about AI in your company are probably thinking about, how can I get this to where I'm still getting the productivity, but now I've got a reduction in force because I'm not paying salaries and benefits and everything else. What I think a lot of procurement practitioners should do, or just back office in general, is embrace that and say, look, there are going to be tasks that we're not going to do anymore. It's going to be up to technology. So what are those areas where I can take these people that were doing these tasks and now move them to solve more difficult problems, or move them to create more value at work? And I think a couple things need to happen for that and for these areas to be prepared. One is an inventory of the tasks that your department is doing. Take that inventory of tasks, and I borrow this from like Lean Six Sigma. Which of those tasks are value add, like true value add that someone would pay money for? Which of those tasks aren't value add, but required to get you to the value add step? And then what are the steps that you're just doing because you always have, and they're not adding any value? Once you identify that list, let's pretend it's 20. Let's say 4 of those are value add. Double down on those. That's where you want to start getting your team trained and really skilled into, we're going to do these 4 things unbelievably well, and let's gladly give these other tasks to technology, to AI, so they can do that on their own. What happens then is, at least in my experience, you start to get a more fulfilled team, right? Because now they're working on things that from an enterprise are perceived more valuable. They're, it's probably stretch assignments for some of the people you've had to take off the tactical stuff. So they're getting more skills, they're learning more things. And then by being really good at that stuff, what I see tend to happen is now you start asking different questions. You start asking more forward-looking questions, more strategic questions, right? Which opens up more doors for you. So I don't view technology as something that we should be afraid of or that's going to eliminate our positions. I think it's going to provide us a platform to be even more of a value-add organization and more strategic to our business partners.
I think it's also good advice, again, one of your first parts of that comment and looping to the end, is the fact that it almost doesn't matter if all this AI buzz would fulfill or not. It almost doesn't matter because it already creates change. It creates change on how businesses think about where should they spend money on. Just the belief that should drive people to do some of those, and I'm very thankful for your very practical. It's very hard sometimes to find, okay, so what? But what do I need to do? And you laid out a list of things that are very, very practical to do. And everyone listening in, I think, should do that regardless of how they feel about their safety, quote unquote, or the excitement. It's always like some people getting afraid, you know, on the same thing. Some other people would see this as an opportunity and excitement. Both needs to do that work to really understand and map down what are those things that are value add that we want to be good at, that we want to be the skilled individuals in it. And I think people can also take it to their own private, even if they're not, if someone is listening in, they're not a VP of a department, for your own personal work too. And I think that will create leverage for them to understand, maybe I can then become better if I delegate some of that other tasks or items out of that list that I don't, that are not value add, that I'm not actually adding value there. And you combine it with the alignment survey and you actually verify that those value add things that you think that are value add are actually value add to the other side, to the clients or whoever is receiving your work. So yeah, I think phenomenal points there. Completely agree.
I think there's that fear level or the fear that what we're doing isn't adding value, that 12-step programs, this is actually, I think, one of the steps in the 12-step program, and I'm going to get this wrong. My apologies to anyone. A fearless inventory, right? What are the things that I'm truly doing wrong? What are the things that I need to work on? And that's like ripping off the Band-Aid and looking at the open wound. But that has to get done to get better. And you have to not be afraid to find the skeletons in the closet and then clean out the closet, you know, and get better.
Yeah. And this is where those changes, whether they're really going to happen or not with AI, should be leveraged as a reason to do it.
Yep.
It's maybe I'm going to have my parents or my wife family visiting this weekend. Maybe. Okay. That's a good enough reason to, I don't know, fix the backyard or fix, it doesn't matter. Maybe they won't show up, but there's a reason for me to go and do that. Like you said, that cleanup or that work. You know, maybe last questions around that. I know that VSP is on the larger side and acquired a lot of companies. How much do you think this entire topic is different if we're talking to a large company versus a medium company versus a small company? From your experience, because you've also worked on, as you mentioned, Blue Shield and other organizations, is that the same? Is that different? Where is it different?
Yeah, I think, and you're probably aware of this, Augie, the bigger the company, the less ability you have to be agile. And that's because things tend to have to go through various layers of review and approval. Steering a ship is much different than steering a boat. However, what I think practitioners in shared services areas need to do is take the boat mentality. Even if you're in a ship, you have some agency over your division and you have some influence over those people that are near you. So how can you steer your ship agilely and nimbly and make those changes that are going to drive that value? I think startups inherently do it because they have to. They don't have kind of the protection and the burden of the bureaucracy that's all around. I think people that have been in large organizations their entire career probably don't know how to steer the boat. So I would encourage people to, you know, there's the old adage, make big problems small problems and small problems no problems. Chip away at things, compartmentalize them, fix it, and then move on to the next thing, I think is helpful in any area, whether it's big, larger.
Nice. Well, those awesome list of points and advice. Maybe to finish up on a personal note, any advice you received early in your career where you felt like this was very transformational or worth paying forward?
I don't know if it's direct advice, but the people in my career that I've had the most impact tended to behave in similar manners. And what I mean by that is they weren't directors in the sense that they weren't telling you which direction you needed to go. There was a lot of questions. Why do you do that? What about it do you like? Asking those questions, creating that kind of culture of curiosity helps me think through problems and helps me work with my team to help them think through their problems. Because ultimately too, I want a team that's self-sufficient. I want a team that can think critically for themselves and fix problems on their own. But if I'm the one saying, oh, do this, do that, they don't learn those skills, right? And so I think that's the biggest thing. If I can impart any words of advice at the end of this, ask a ton of questions, no matter what role you're in.
Yeah, I like it. Yeah, it's hard. It's not always easy.
It is hard.
Not always, yeah.
As a leader, it's very hard sometimes.
Yeah. And like we said it earlier, whatever is applicable to work is probably applicable to house too, right? If you're a parent, you know that point is as critical. It's much easier to tell your kids what to do versus to keep asking them to make logic out of it. But it's inherently obvious that you should ask them so they would learn how to do it. And the same applies to leadership. Very true.
And if my kids hear this, they're going to say, why don't you do this at home?
Exactly.
You know, they're going to say, why do you tell me what to do?
Because it's hard. In the mix of all of it, it's hard. And that's why it's important. Very good. Nathan, thank you so much for this. That was really fun. If anyone wanted to continue nerd with you, is it LinkedIn, X, where can they find you?
Yeah, LinkedIn. Probably the easiest place to find me. You can reach me at email nathan.haydenmeyer@vsp.com, but LinkedIn's probably the easiest.
Very good.
I appreciate it.
It was my pleasure. Thank you.
I hope you enjoyed this episode of Modern Business Operations. You can see the show notes and all of the resources mentioned in today's episode at tonkin.com/mbopod. Thank you for listening, and be sure to subscribe for updates on future episodes. And if you're interested in staying up to date on all things business operations, join the Tonkin community at tonkin.com/community.